morning. Welcome back to the second hour of Better Lawns and Gardens. I'm your host, Teresa Watkins. I'm a horticulturist, landscape designer, garden author. I love helping people with their gardening, and I love helping diagnosing problems or maybe making some suggestions, design suggestions for your landscape. So we love that you're here with us this morning. Hope you're enjoying your morning beverage, your coffee. I've got my cup of tea. Lizzie, what are you drinking this morning?
Six shots of espresso with heavy cream and honey.
And you're just sitting there normally, just very calm.
It's funny because the other morning I didn't have time to make mine, and I came in here because I do the Good Morning Orlando show.
Yes.
And I thought Stedman was going to kick me out of the studio because I couldn't sit still. And he's like, what is wrong with you? I'm like, I don't know. I didn't make my coffee.
But they say that the people with ADHD, they can handle the caffeine.
It
balances them out.
It
you
really
know?
Does. And then when I don't have it, I was so squirrely. And it wasn't even like I was craving it. I was so squirrely. He's like, you got to stop.
Poor Stedman. All right. Well, we think John Denver's coming into the building soon. So let's do the dirty word of the day. And the dirty word of the day is monocarpic. M-O-N-O-C-A-R-P-I-C. Monocarpic. Monocarpic is a term derived from the Greek mono, meaning single, and karpos, meaning fruit or grain, and was first used by the 19th century Swiss-French botanist Alphonse de Candolle. Monocarpic plants are not necessarily annuals because some monocarpic plants can live a number of years before they will flower. In some monocarpic plants, flowering signals old age, while in others, the production of fruits and seeds causes changes within the plants which lead to death. These changes are induced by chemicals that act as hormones, redirecting the resources of the plants from the roots and leaves to the production of fruits and seed. Monocarpic means these plants bloom one time, and then the main or mother plant dies. However, new plantlets start to grow from the base or the seeds inside the flower. The century plant in the genus Agave, some terrestrial bromeliads in the genus Puya, Tillandsia utriculata, how's that? And some yuccas and many bamboos can take 8 to 20 years, or in the case of some bamboos, even over 100 years to bloom, and then they die. Hawaiian silver swords and their relatives may take 10 to 50 years before flowering. Some examples of monocarps are aeoniums, agaves, bananas, bamboo, bromeliads, carrots, gamma grass, fishtail palms, hens and chicks, calanchos, the paddle plant, lettuce, and radishes, rice, sunflowers, tillandsias, wheat, and zinnias. So the dirty word of the day is monocarpic. And I love that word. I think it's a great word. All right. If you have a gardening question, we're going to be taking your calls this hour, 1-888-455-2967, or you can text 23680. I'm going to be talking about how to grow plumeria today, and then also what you can do with sugarcane. Sugarcane is a popular plant to grow in organic landscapes and in agricultural here in Florida. But what can you do with sugar cane?
Eat it. You just chew on it, because that's what my daddy used to do when he came home from the railroad on the weekends, is he would bring me sticks of sugar cane from South Florida.
And I took our grandkids to the Tampa State Fair, and they loved the sugar stalks. You could just buy the sugar cane stalks. You could just buy them.
Crazy
and
awesome.
Just eat them and just suck. And those taste really good. Let's go to Jay in Melbourne. Good morning, Jay. How can I help you?
Yes, I have a Durantha, golden dewdrop, if you prefer that name, out in my nice on the south side of my house, and it has an unidentified insect on it that's kind of covering itself with its fresh, so I can't figure out what it is.
Right.
I sent you a couple pictures of it earlier this week, and I think I've picked it all off, but I can't tell that for sure for a few days and see if it comes back. I also noticed that some of the damage that it's done, it's like drilled little holes into the stem, as well as chewed some branches off.
Yes.
I was kind of And I was wondering if maybe I should use some of that insecticide where you put it on the root and it gets sucked up into the tree, since I can't see what's in these little holes.
In the systemic, yes. So you sent me some great photographs, and I even shared them with our good friend, Dr. Matt Borden, and he also identified it as fresh, but the insect is a type of stem borer. Okay, and the host plant is a dahlia, or like you say, the duranta, which is in that family. So it's a European corn borer, and the internal stems are going to be difficult to diagnose until you start seeing the damage. So you're seeing the little holes already. And what you can do is use a systemic herbicide, and you could even use like BioAdvance 3-in-1, and that will take care of the issue. But I'm concerned about where it is. So when you sent me the photographs, it looks like it's in the shade. It's on the south side, but does it get shade in the afternoon?
No.
No, so it's in full sun all day?
Yeah, it might in the winter part of it might get some shade, but not this time of year. It's
okay.
Definitely full sun between the spring and summer.
Excellent, excellent. Okay, well then that's good. Moths, again, you know, the corn borer is a type of moth, so you want to keep the lights off, you know, in your area if you can, but you can definitely use a systemic like BioAdvance 3-in-1.
Okay, I'll try that.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it. His Duranta was huge. It's like 8 feet tall. Really good job. And so beautiful. People don't think Durantas grow that long. If it's Saturday morning, you're listening to Better Lawns and Gardens. I'm Teresa Watkins, and this is Florida's Talk and Entertainment Network. Welcome back to Better Lawns and Gardens, 1-888-455-2967, or you can text me 23680, and you can we'll help you with your questions. I want to say to Jay, thank you so much for the great photographs. It is a corn borer. You found the holes, and again, any systemic from BioAdvance will work on it. And it will kill them while they're in the plant. You can also spray 7 on the leaves too as well and keep them from eating the leaves there. So let's go to a subject of mosquitoes. Pinky in Port Orange says, on the subject of mosquitoes, I'm looking at purchasing a bat house. Can you give your expertise on this, please, and where I should possibly purchase one? Well, bat houses are excellent if you... Pinky, if you've got the property, you want to make sure that you're putting them in a location where the bats can fly up into it. So it's kind of an open space on a tree. And then also to purchasing one, you can check out bat organizations, local ones. Also to online, there are a lot of great bat houses sold. And then also, too, you want to make sure you're not spraying for mosquitoes or, using pesticides at night, because that's what the bats need to eat. That and dragonflies are great, too, preventers of mosquitoes as well. So if you're spraying your yard, you're not going to see the lightning bugs. You're not going to see the mosquitoes in that area. Now, around your house is a different story, right up close to your house. But where you want the bats to be, you want them to take care of the issue and not use an herbicide.
Yeah, yeah. And we've been thinking about getting a few bat houses for our property, too, because we have a lot of bats and absolutely love them.
Excellent. That's a great choice. And so please discuss, and this is someone from St. Cloud, please discuss the Panama rose soil height and problems. Panama roses are lovely. They are a type of succulent from South America, and you can find some varieties in Africa too as well. And by being a succulent in that big bulbous space, they don't need a lot of water, so they're very drought tolerant. They can get tall and big, up to 20 feet tall, but usually you see them, they're maintained in a smaller container. about 3 to 4 feet tall at the max. So they just take regular fertilizer, but watering possibly once a week during the summer. Do not water it in the wintertime, and it'll be just fine for you. So that's a great question. Had a question on growing edibles in South Florida from Miami. And the edibles that you could be planting this month in Miami include sugar cane and tropical spinaches. So like Malabar spinach and Asian spinach and Korean spinach. They all do well here in Florida. And then also too, amaranths, papayas, pigeon peas and pineapples, sweet potatoes and chayote in the South can be planted right now. Here in Central Florida, you can be planting boniato, gingers and roselle, sugarcane, and again, the tropical spinaches, cassavas and calabasas, long squash, loofah squash, papayas, pigeon peas, pineapples, and Seminole pumpkins, and sweet potatoes. You can get Seminole pumpkins at Quality Green Specialist in DeLand in Volusia County. Chayote, okras, and southern peas. And then North Florida, you can do the boniato and gingers and roselle too, the tropical spinaches as well, the same amaranth, calabasas, long squash, loofahs, papayas, pigeon peas, and Seminole pumpkins, and sweet potatoes, and then the southern peas, okra, and chayote. So those are really great edibles that you can be planting right now. They can take the heat. They can take the water. Just rainfall is usually what they need, so you don't need to be overwatering them. But here's some things, Lizzie, that you can make with sugar cane.
Mm-hmm.
You can put sugar cane in a blender, cut it up into small pieces, put it in a blender or a juicer, and strain it to make fresh sugar cane juice.
Ooh, okay.
Then sugar cane syrup. What you do is you simmer the juice in a saucepan until it thickens and reduces by half. And you can use the syrup as a natural sweetener for desserts, pancakes, waffles, and even added to beverages for a touch of sweetness. You can use the sugar cane stalks as stirrers. You can put them in your drinks, your Cosmos, and all your different alcoholic beverages.
Yes.
And stir them. You can use them as skewers. When grilling or roasting, swap the metal or metal skewers with sugar cane stalks. Cut the stalks into smaller pieces, soak them in water to prevent burning, and then use them to thread your favorite meats, vegetables, or fruits on. The sugar cane will infuse a subtle sweetness with your dish while providing an aesthetic presentation. Then also candied sugar cane. You cut the peeled sugar cane into thin strips, boil them in a simple syrup made from sugar and water, and the strips will absorb the syrup and become chewy, sweet candies that can be enjoyed as a snack or as a garnish for desserts. Sugarcane molasses is a thick, dark syrup that's a byproduct of the sugar refining process. You can use it as a glaze for meats, incorporate it into baked goods, or even drizzle it over pancakes and waffles. You can use it in smoothies, sugar cane in tea, and then sugar cane in desserts. From cakes to cookies, it can be used as an ingredient, whether you're making a caramel sauce or a custard or a tropical sorbet. The addition of sugar cane is going to be wonderful. And then you can also use it, Lizzie, as a natural scrub for your skin. It's an excellent exfoliating agent. Mix some finely ground sugar cane with a oil like coconut or olive oil to create a homemade scrub that will leave your skin smooth and silky.
See, I've heard of that. You see the sugar cane scrubs, but I never really put, you kind of don't put two and two together with names until you really look into that. But those are some really good ideas. And so, sometimes it just seems like we have so much processed food that would be nice to have a sugar cane and
exactly.
Just do your own syrup and stuff.
Exactly. And I was just thinking, people grow sugar cane, but do they use it? And so we want them to use it. So you just, planting them and use them in your meals, in your diet. So we will do that. Linda is moving her Lila avocado. It's 4-inch, 4-foot tall tree into a permanent large container? How often and what kind and how much fertilizer should she use? Well, you can use any of the citrus fertilizers. They're fine. Sunnyland has a great citrus fertilizer that also labeled for avocados. It's great. And when should you expect an avocado? I would need to know how old it is. If it came from a pit, then it's going to take probably 5 to 7 years to grow an avocado, to produce one. If you're lucky, it may be a little bit sooner than that. If it's a grafted avocado, then it's going to produce right away, and you should have flowers this year and then also next year and get an avocado next year. So good decision then. So Gary in Maitland says, hi, Teresa. Hi, Lizzie. Gary says hi. Okay, 2 weeks ago, we added a big section of oyster plants to an east-facing bed at the front of the house. It gets good sun, no tree cover. Now a dozen or so of them are spontaneously defoliating and sort of just flattening onto the ground. What is happening here? Sprinkler has been on each morning early. We should have that dun-dun-dun-dun, which didn't work for Simon this week, I will tell you. What can we do? Was oyster plants a bad choice for the bed? No, oyster plants are excellent for full sun areas, Gary. Too much water. Okay, and so never water anything except for trees and shrubs every day when first establishing, especially with all the rainfall we're getting. So your oyster plants only need about an inch of water a week. One or two times a week is all they need. So stop watering them. They'll come back. Okay, and they'll be just fine. Just let rainfall do it. So I heard Simon's da-da-da-dum problem this week.
That was funny.
It was cracking me up.
Yeah, sometimes here in our studios, in all studios, we can't get to our sound effects quick enough. And so that's what Teresa was referencing, is that we couldn't get to the da-da-da-da and stuff. Yes.
It was so funny. So Jerry in Citrus County, good morning. How can I help you?
Well, good morning, Teresa. I'd like to know how to grow a goji berry. Mine don't seem to be doing well in pots.
Okay. What kind of soil is it in?
Well, it's enriched soil, like a black cow and some, you know, regular soil.
Is it regular potting soil or soil from your ground?
No, it's soil from the ground, but it's got black cow.
Okay. All right.
Mm-hmm.
And how big are they?
Oh, about a foot.
And how long have you had them?
Oh, a couple of months. But they were doing fine, but when the sun got so hot, it seemed to bother them. But they're moist in there. I water them, you know.
Okay. How often do you water them?
I water them and I feel they're dry.
Okay.
It's usually every day in this hot sun. Before that, I didn't have to water hardly at all.
Right. How big are the pots?
Oh, it's a gallon and a half, 2 gallon.
It's a 2 gallon pot? Okay. And
yeah.
And they're, again, how tall did you say they were? About a foot tall?
About a foot.
Okay.
Yeah. They sort of lose their green down below, and they're only a little green at the top now. They're like the tomato plants.
Yeah. Okay. So they're turning yellow. So they're a little chlorotic. I'm going to suggest that the potting soil, you need to add a little bit more aeration to it, not water it as much. And if you haven't fertilized, go ahead and fertilize it with just a balanced fertilizer, 666. Thank you, Jerry, for the phone call. We're going to be back with more of Better Lawns and Gardens. I'll expound on the goji berries a little bit more for Jerry, too, as well. If it's Saturday morning, you're listening to Better Lawns and Gardens. I'm Teresa Watkins, and this is Florida's Talk and Entertainment Network. Welcome back to Better Lawns and Gardens. I would love to have your phone call, 1-888-455-2967, or you can text 23680. If you'd like to go to my website, you can go to www.she-consulting.com. This month is National Rose Month. June is always great for growing roses. If you'd like to have a list of my favorite roses and how to grow them, you can go to betterlawns.com and send me an email. You can go to my website and send me an email, or teresa.watkins@live.com and say, Teresa, please send me your favorite roses and I will send them to you with a list of how to grow them. And so Jerry called, and he was right at the end of a hard break, so I really couldn't elaborate. But Jerry, I just want you to understand about the planting in the containers. It's always better to start rooting a plant or growing a small tree in good soil. What I mean by soil is potting soil. If you're getting dirt out of the ground, it could be too dense for the plant to grow quickly. You want the plants to grow, you know, moderately fast. You want them to grow nice and tall and healthy. So mixing your potting soil with some black cow, making sure that the soil has good aeration, good air in it, that's going to allow the roots to penetrate and go down deeper more quickly. So I would use potting soil whenever I am using a container. That way you know that your little small shrub or tree is going to take off quickly. So besides the good potting soil, then you want to make sure that you go ahead and fertilize it on a regular basis. And you can use slow-release fertilizer for that. You can use for the goji berry, the citrus, and avocado fertilizer from Sunnyland. That would be a good choice. Or just regular 666-888-1010. Okay? So your soil in your container needs to be able to breathe and have good aeration in it for the microbes to encourage to break down the soil so the plant can absorb it and grow. So just check that you don't have too dense of a soil, Jerry. Thank you for calling. I love getting calls from Jerry. He's great. Let's go to Jacqueline in Melbourne. Good morning.
Good morning so much. Thank you so much for your show. I learn a lot from you.
Thank you.
I have a wood pergola with treated wood covered in beautiful, beautiful crepe jasmine.
Okay.
How can I clean the mold off my pergola without harming my jasmine?
Okay, so it is stained. How long has the stain been on?
I think it's unstained. We just recently bought the house, and I don't think the wood has a stain on it.
Oh, okay, great. Okay, super. So if you use a pressure washer, you can pressure wash between the leaves and the vine, and get it off that way. If you wanted to add, I would say a little, very tiny little bit of bleach. That won't hurt the Confederate jasmine too much. Now, is it Confederate jasmine or crepe jasmine?
Crepe.
It is crepe. Okay. Yes. I still think that you can get in there with the pressure washer and with it like the streamer kind of. Just kind of get in there and pressure wash it off, and your plant will be fine.
Okay, that sounds simple enough. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you. Send me pictures. I'd love to see it. That would be beautiful. All right. So, Jacqueline, thank you for listening to Better Lawns and Gardens and calling in. I hope she sends pictures. I'm putting in a pergola now, and we just had another one put in and putting plants on it, and we're waiting for it to stain it. And you got to let it age first, just a little bit. So plumeria, I said I was going to give you some information on growing plumeria. Those are your sticks that you see for sale at all the plant shops. And they could be anywhere from 6 inches to a foot long to, 18 inches long. And literally, you can just stick plumeria in the ground and it will grow. Stick it in a container and it will grow. It needs full sun conditions, at least 6 to 8 hours of direct sunlight. You want to use well-draining soil. And again, this is where you need to understand well-draining soil. It could be a planting or a potting mix or good soil that's aerated. It's got compost. It's got black manure in it, but it has air in it. You want to make sure that it's not too dense. It takes rich in organic matter is good for plumerias, loamy or sandy soils. With a pH between 6.5 and 7 is ideal. You do not want to use heavy clay soils that retain water, as this can lead to root rot. And that's what I'm kind of concerned with Jerry's plant, the goji berry, a little bit. It's too much. It's holding on to the water too long. Water plumeria deeply but infrequently. What does that mean? Once a week, once every 2 weeks, or just rainfall during the growing season. Provide about an inch of water a week. And then it loves warm temperatures. So from zone 9 up, you got to be careful about the winter time and that it will knock the leaves back. It'll go dormant in the winter. Plumeria prefers the south, 65 degrees to 80 degrees, and they should be protected if the temperature goes below 50, which is definitely from Lake Okeechobee on up. If you live in a cooler climate, you want to put them in a container, then bring them inside. That's fine, too. You want to fertilize them with a phosphorus-rich fertilizer. So that's the middle number. So when we say phosphorus-rich, if it's a 6-10-6, okay, that middle number is higher than the nitrogen and the potassium. That's going to tell it, it's going to force it to produce blooms. Balanced fertilizer with 10-30-10 is recommended, okay? But as long as the middle number is higher, that's going to be good. They do get pest issues, especially if they're close to the house and don't have good air circulation. So important when we have these instant landscapes and they're all crammed in there and they're up against the house. You're going to see insect issues. You're going to see disease issues. So watch for pests such as mealybugs and scale. And then so you inspect them on a regular basis. Walk your yard on a regular basis and look for it. Avoid overwatering, and they are susceptible to root rot, so ensure proper drainage. And so that's how you grow plumeria. It's not unusual or not abnormal for you to have a plumeria that's blooming from April all the way through to September. Then it loses its leaves and goes dormant. Don't worry about it. It will come back. But if we get some very severe frost for 2 to 3 days, frost and freezes like which damaged our citrus industry, your plumeria may die. Okay, so it's definitely a warm creature, likes to have warm weather, not cold weather. We're going to be back. We have last segment coming up, and we can take more of your phone calls, 1-888-455-2967. Or you can text us like Linda and Gary in Maitland and St. Cloud. You can text us 23680. If you're Saturday morning, you're listening to Better Lawns and Gardens. I'm Teresa Watkins, and this is Florida's Talk. We are back with more of Better Lawns and Gardens. I'm Teresa Watkins, your host, a landscape designer, garden author, horticulturist. I love to help people with their gardening questions. 1-888-455-2967, or you can text me 23680. And I just wanted to go back to plumerias. I forgot to mention their beautiful colors. You can find them in so many colors: white, yellow, pink, red, and orange. And they even have some varieties that are multicolored. So they make a great tropical display for South Florida, even all the way up through Central Florida. You just want to make sure they do get protected in the wintertime, or just, you just know they're going to go dormant. All right. We had a text message on what to do about mushrooms in the ground, and this is in Claremont. So mushrooms are normal, and you see them when we've had a lot of rain or if you're overwatering, but they come from the spores that are spread through the air, and they really don't hurt your yard at all. And when your yard dries up, they will disappear and go away. So I would just say if you have dogs or little children, just keep them away from it. You can kick them over, you can pick them up and put them in the garbage can, but you do not want to compost them. Okay, do not compost them. That will just spread it in the soil, and then when it rains, you'll get the mushrooms back again. All right, so, but they don't hurt the soil, and I'm actually a mushroom lover. I love them. I grew up with fairy tales. My mother would tell us what to all the magical stories about the fae folk and the little people. And she would see them. My mom would always see the little fairies when we were on a walk. And we'd miss them every time when we were kids. They just ran too fast. We never saw them. But my mom always did. And so we had wonderful walks. And so mushrooms are, I love mushrooms. So
I just worry because I have so many in my yard and random different ones that, you know, like the grand brats the other day, one of them was like, oh, yeah, look, there's a mushroom. And he went to go pick it up. I'm like, whoa. Because I'm like, I don't know the poisonous ones versus the not poisonous. Yeah. And I also know that some of them you can't even touch.
No.
So.
I used to play a game with you just go through and kick them like a football and get the kids just to kick them and then don't pick them up, you know. But the fairies didn't like that either.
All right.
So how do you save marigold seeds? And did you know that once you have marigolds, you never need to buy them again? Because every marigold flower that blooms, you can put into an envelope and dry it and save the seeds.
Oh, snap.
And then you can plant them. So, like, if you plant them in the springtime and you've got like 30 or 40 different marigold dead seed heads, open that up and each one will make a marigold. So you can go ahead and plant them again and they will bloom again in the fall. So you can have two cycles of marigolds. Impatiens and periwinkles are looking really great right now. The Madagascar vincas, Madagascar periwinkles, are looking beautiful.
Right.
They love it. They love the heat. They love this rainfall. And then also, too, if you want to get started on your fall gardening, now's the time to buy your seeds. Go through the catalogs. Go to the stores. Buy your seeds. Make sure they're fresh, okay, that you're not buying old seeds from last year, but you can get fresh ones because when you look for them in August, they're going to be sold out. They are going to be gone. So right now is the time to be going ahead and buying your seeds for the fall gardens, your broccoli and your carrots and your turnips and your rutabagas and all your warm or your cool season vegetables. Go ahead and buy those now.
Yeah, I didn't tell you what I did. Okay, so I absolutely love growing cucumbers. The only thing I don't like is these ugly things called stink bugs.
Yeah.
So I my cucumbers, they were growing. They were starting to produce and little produces, I should say. I spent 2 weeks between night and day going out with scissors to clip these stink bugs in half because they were mating, okay? And I'm like, you know, and then I've tried Seven Dust and then I did the soapy oil or soapy water and I did the neem oil. I've used everything and they just still kept coming. And I said, you know what? The last 2 years, I literally wanted to step out in front of a speeding semi because I can't handle this trying to kill these, and they won't go away. I can't get rid of them. It doesn't matter what I do. So you know what I did? But I went out there and I ripped up all my cucumbers and threw them in the burn pile.
Oh,
I don't care. Yeah. I just, you know what? I just, you have to pick your battles in life. Stink bugs are not one of them.
And you're not dealing with those issues anymore. That's good. I will tell you. I'm just. That's good to know.
You should be proud of me or not.
Well, I would suggest that you start trying to bring in more predator bugs and things like that. So,
okay.
And then, you know, make sure that they've all got good conditions, good airflow, so they're not stressed out.
Mm-hmm.
Stressed out plants can attract bugs. Stressed out plants, stressed out trees can attract bugs.
Right.
I mean, you know, borers, I mean, literally they can smell stressed out pine trees miles away.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So, you know, I would probably try and chill a little bit.
You know what, Miss...
Just be a little bit...
Miss Teresa?
Yes.
You know what? Listen, let me tell you what. You know, I've literally just created job security for our local produce people for cucumbers. That's all I'm saying.
Well, I'm impressed with your celery. I'm telling you, they are beautiful.
Oh, thanks. I got to bring you in. I got to cut some more, so I'll bring you
in
some
next celery. Saturday. Tony loves celery and cheese and all kinds of peanut butter on his celery. And, you know, so dip on the celery. So, yeah. And I use it in soups and stuff and stuffing. I love to use it in stuffing.
Yeah, see, I'm not a big celery person. Like, not a big person to eat. It might be in stuff. And I like the celery flakes and the seeds and stuff. But yes. I laugh because I've never grown celery before.
You did a great job.
And we have like a whole floor of other stations. So I'm like running around like showing up like, look, I grew celery. And everybody's like, can we have it? I'm like, yeah. Here.
And no stink bugs.
Do stink bugs go to celery?
No.
Oh.
So
you but, almost won me over there for a second. Yeah, I might try to do cucumbers again whenever you said that. I thought, oh wow, well they didn't go to the celery. What did I do right there?
Yeah, no, that just, you know, I just think your cucumbers, and again too, you've got to make sure you're harvesting them so that you're not, you know, staying on the vine too long. So
true.
You know, so I would encourage everybody to do that. That growing vegetables and things, go out and harvest it. Growing herbs, use your herbs. Okay, use them. Don't
share them.
Share
That's what
them.
I do.
Share them, and we will definitely do it. So it's important to know that right now, summertime, June 1st, stopped fertilizing in the yards. So it's literally banned in most counties in Florida. This is for your turf and for anywhere where you where the fertilizer ban is. You cannot use it. Herbicides, you do not want to use herbicides when the temperature is over 85 degrees. They will not work well in your turf. They will probably damage the turf, and your weeds will just laugh at you because it will kind of just make them sick, but it's not going to kill it. Herbicides, when the temperatures are over 85 degrees, become ineffective. So just remember that. How can you keep your plants healthy and your life stress-free? You want to make sure you're planting the right plant in the right place. When plants are planted with too much sun and they need shade, or they're planted in the shade and not enough sun, they will be susceptible to insects. All right? You want to make sure you're not over-fertilizing. Over-fertilized lawns get chinch bugs and sod webworms. Chinch bugs is great, too. So just make sure you're not overdoing anything in the landscape. Lizzie, we want to thank Heather Stickney from SummitResponsibleSolutions.com, SummitChemical.com, and she was great today. If you're going on vacation, make sure you take your yard spray and also your mosquito bits and dunks and your shield, your armor shield.
Yes, and if you are over there and the area where Peterson's Nursery is, you guys take your chair and go join the patriotic landscape.
That is true. That is true. We got to thank everyone. Everyone who goes to our Facebook page and likes it. Manny, thank you so much for being so good. Also, Linda and Gary and Jerry for today. Mike, Michael, and another. We had two Jerrys today. And then just a great hello to Katie Bachman and Gary Bachman. We just want to say hi.
Yes.
And we do appreciate them. Lizzie, thank you for everything you do. You're such a wonderful producer.
Well, thank you for letting me do this.
Well, I tell you what, we do appreciate it. If it's Saturday morning, you're listening to Better Lawns and Gardens. I'm Teresa Watkins, and this is Florida's Talk and Entertainment Network.